Accession number 25219, Reel 1.
Could you give me your full name and date of birth, please?
Yes, it's Gerald Charles Walters, and the 4th of the 8th, 1933.
And what was your rank on leaving the service?
WO1 ASM, vehicles.
And what were the dates of your service?
September 1955 to October 1977.
And what were the reactions of your family and friends when you joined up? And why did you join up?
Good question. Well, basically, I was exempt national service because I was an indentured apprentice with Shell Mason BP as a motor engineer. And I had to do 2 years anyway, so I found that doing 2 years at 25 shillings a week after becoming a qualified engineer was a bit daunting. So I decided I would sign on for 3 years, and then I found out you could do 22 with the option every three, which was a new thing at that time. So I decided to do that. And reaction of my parents and family? Well, my father's an ex-military man anyway, ex-East Surreys, company sergeant major, and he didn't mind at all. And basically, mother the same, down to you, whatever you want to do with your life. So I was left free to do what I wanted. But and as for my friends, all right, some of them thought I was a bit crazy to join the army, but we all had, in those days, did national service, so it was a much more accepted things that to go in the army, you know, in those days.
So, when you joined up, where did you have to go? What was your reception at Reamy like?
It was okay. I went to Number 1 Training Battalion, which was at Blandford Forum, and I joined B Company there. And it was okay. I enjoyed myself.
What was the accommodation like?
Fairly tat, I must say, compared with today. Sort of 30 blokes living in a barrack block, spiders as they were in those days, six-legged spiders. It was clean, although the buildings were a bit old. And the discipline was fairly rigid, bed blocking in those days and all the things that went with it. And young lance corporals and corporals who had more power than perhaps they should have had and made life a little difficult. However, for me it wasn't too bad because I was an inter-counties cross-country runner before I joined the army. And that was quickly found out by Sergeant Major Wells, who was the company Sergeant Major there, and who was in charge of the battalion cross-country team. So where other people were going off to do fatigues, yours truly was going off doing cross-country training. So I didn't find life too difficult. Plus, I played football and I played for the battalion down there as in goal. Yeah.
So where did you actually train? Where was this training?
But the running.
Your first military training.
My first military training, well, I'd say in the Blandford Forum, Number 1 Training Battalion. And from there, after the sort of basic, whatever we did, 12 weeks, I think, or something like that, I did my trade test as well as a vehicle mechanic. And for some unknown reason, I failed the FIE, fuel injection equipment test. Having just served for six months in the finest FIE, this training establishment in Great Britain, I think I annoyed the warrant officer who was investigating me, and perhaps he felt I needed pulling down a peg. So I went off to Number 911 Training Battalion at Great Malvern and did an FIE course there for a fortnight. And then I volunteered to do A vehicles. Because I thought that was something a bit different from what I've been doing for 5 years in Civvy Street. And I went down to Warden.
And what were A vehicles?
The A vehicles are tanks and armoured carriers and such like, you know, armoured cars and things like that. A bit different from what you would experience with normal B vehicles in civil life. So I went to Borden and I did an A vehicle training course. And from there I went to Germany. I went to four armoured workshops where I worked on A vehicles, and they were at that time forming the FRTs, Ford Repair Teams, and Ford Remy Groups. And I became a Lance Corporal, then a Full Corporal. And as a Full Corporal, I think I was the only Full Corporal that was an FRT commander at that time. Most of them were Staff Sergeants and a few Sergeants. But I was a Corporal, had my own half-track team. And while I was there, I went to TTS Duisburg, Technical Training School Duisburg, and I did some specialist training on things like the American M44, which had just come into service, and of course the Saracen and the Saladin, which had come into service then, and of course,
this
would be starting in January 1956 and going up to 1957-58. Where we moved from Hanover for armoured workshops, and we moved to Detmold. The buildings were technically belonged to a company called Telefunken, you may have heard of them, and they wanted them back. And the franchise ran out, that were, you know, under which at least we were holding them on, so we had to move. And we moved to Detmold and became four armoured workshops, Detmold.
What was discipline and morale like?
Very good. Very good at Four Armour Workshops. We had a couple of Majors Lieutenant Colonels who were absolutely super. You know, I mean, if you'd have said to you, I want volunteers for the moon, everybody would have jumped. They were really super guys in those days. And the morale was extremely high. We had a good football team. We had national service. And we had one or two national servicemen who were a pain in the butt, to be quite honest. National service, you get really three sorts of blokes. Those that didn't really want to do it, but they made the best of it. Those who just soldiered on and just went with the flow. And those who didn't want to do it and let you know they didn't want to do it. And they were the pains. But it was a good thing. I think we could do with it back now. Young men came in, wet behind the ears, been looked after by mum all their lives, and they learnt to keep themselves clean and tidy, accepted discipline, and most importantly, I feel, they learned to live with other people and become part of a team, which is what we had at Four Armoured, and it was superb. It was really good.
What was the basic routine like, the daily routine?
Daily routine? Getting up rather early. Yes, got up early, washed and shaved, went to breakfast, and the food was reasonably good. We had a fairly good bunch of ACC guys, and the food was pretty good there. Then it was parade, where you were inspected, where we tied you if you had long hair, dirty fingernails, and all the other things that went with normal discipline. We had a couple of sergeant majors who were a bit of a laugh. Harry Greystock was one of them, and Mulholland was another. Mulholland was a punch drunk. He fought against Gardner, the Grenadier Guard, I think he was, for the British heavyweight boxing champion, and got rather badly beaten. And he was in hospital for a while, and then he came to us, but he was never the same again. We used to call him Punchy. And then we had Harry Greystock, who was known as Coconut Head, because he had short hair was not the vogue in those days, and he was one of the first out of Kruka. But as sergeant majors, they were pretty reasonable sort of guys. And I think the thing about it was they realised that we had a job to do technically. And this is what I think where the majors and the colonels came in. They turned around and said, right, these are technical guys. I know we've got to be soldiers as well. But, you know, when you've been out all night and you've been working on some difficult job, mechanical wise, then, you know, you didn't weren't expected to get up at span of heart in the morning and go on parade. You know, they used to allow you a couple of hours to lie in, that sort of thing, which was perhaps not the norm, but it was good. Yeah, it's first class. And then after parade, it was go down to your place of work, B vehicles, A vehicles, stores, wherever you were. You were organised and run by, you had a, each company had a captain and a warrant officer, normally a WO2. I think ours was a bloke called Avard. And then you went and did your job, repaired vehicles, whatever you had to do throughout the day. Then you had lunch and tea, and then the evening. But if you were on duty, you were on duty. You had to go and do guard duty, which meant you knocked off about half an hour early. But if you knew you were, you got your kit ready the night before. And then it was time was your own. If you want to go down into Hanover, which was an amazing city to be in, still recovering from the war, I'm afraid, but there we are. Or you went to the NAFI. I must admit, I didn't use the NAFI all that much, or the Corps Mass, because I used to go out and see the city. I still do to this day. I still go out and visit places. And that's always been the way I went. And I learned to speak a bit of German as well, so that was useful.
So you're a vehicle mechanic, but which trades were available to you, and why did you go to be a vehicle mechanic?
Well, because I'd done 5 years apprenticeship with Shell as a vehicle engineer, therefore I wanted to continue being what I had already knew something about, which gave me a good standing and meant to say that I very quickly did my third class, second class and third class trade training, which I did at the second class I did in-house, and the first class I had to go to A to be assessed at another workshop. So I went to Rintelm, where I had a certain number of tasks performed, and I was watched over a period of 7 days by a senior artificer, who then assessed my capabilities of doing the various repairs that I had to do. Then I had to do some written papers and so forth. So that was my first class trade test. I also had to get education standards. So although I had some O-levels from the civil life, I hadn't got the paperwork with me. So I unfortunately had to go and take third, second and first class army education, EPC advanced and all that sort of thing, which I did. And then belatedly, my results came through from Cambridge University. but unfortunately, then I'd already sat and done these things. So I was then qualified, basically, for a promotion, except on the regimental side. Once again, I did a CADA, once again, third class locally. Then I did a second class CADA, which I went to, once again, to Rintelm for. And then a first class CADA, which I went to technical training school, REME, and I did my first class there and passed, so then I was fully qualified. By that time we'd moved to Detmold, and there was a bit of a problem with a unit at Dusseldorf, which came under the auspices of our commander, and a certain person who will remain nameless was given a punishment posting to Christmas Island because the unit had one vehicle left on the road out of the sort of 59 it had. And there was a bit of a hoo-ha. And as I was, as the unit had just had two sergeants posted in who were non-substantive, they had to fill the corporal's posts. And I was a non-substantive corporal at that time, so it would mean that I would have to come down to Lance Corporal. However, the OC offered me the opportunity to take this posting where I could retain my corporal status and possibly get a feather in my cap if I could get the vehicles back on the road, which I accepted. And I went to Dusseldorf to 4 Ordnance Field Park. And that was in the January. And by the May, we had 100% MT. And in fact, it was in the RAOC magazine. It's the first time 4AFP had gone out into a field on a NATO exercise with 100% MT. So as a result of that, my BME came to see me, who was from Hovorov, and had a chat with me, and asked me various things about whether I was going to stay in the army, whether I was going to go. My period of time was coming up for release. And I said I was going to leave because, you know, I've been a fair amount of time and still only a corporal. Anyway, so he suggested artificer training, which I accepted, and then I went forward to do artificer training.
And what was that like?
Artificer training?
Yeah.
Hard. Hard. First of all, you had to go through 14 days artificer prelim, which was fairly hectic. You were up early and you didn't get to bed until late at night because you were either cleaning kit if you were on regimental, you were swatting up for exams at the end of the week. It was hard graft, okay. You were, you know, run around from pillar to post quite a bit over the 14 days. However, I think it was a test not only of your technical abilities to become an artificer, but also your, if you like, your military discipline and so forth. And if you could take it, then you know you were probably the right sort of material. So I passed the prelim. There was an opportunity of filling a quick slot because somebody had fallen out of a course in September due to illness. Because I was on my prelim at the end of July, and I accepted, much to the chagrin of my commander when I got back, because he hadn't expected me to go so quickly. However, the BME was a good, pretty good cove, and he got a replacement for me, and I went on my TIFFIs, and then normal TIFFI course for 18 months, which was hard. Was hard because you still had to do duties, and you might have been up all night doing a guard duty, and you still had to attend your courses the following day and do all that sort of thing. So it wasn't easy in artificer, and also you had to maintain a standard, because if you didn't, you got either back squatted if you were marginally wrong, or you got thrown off the course if you really dropped a clanger, you know. So once you were on, it didn't mean to say that you were automatically going to become a staff sergeant at the end of the day, and everybody knew that. So you worked bloody hard to get through. Yeah. We lost one guy. He got killed while he was on the course. A bloke called Dick Lloyd, smashing bloke. And we all got called off of Christmas leave in order to go and do his funeral, but he was a nice guy. But the course was pretty good. In fact, one of the chaps on my TIFFIS course, I still see quite regularly today. We're good friends. In fact, he became a captain, Captain Wally Belgum, and whose son is now a lieutenant colonel. And we still see each other today. So you know, we've kept in contact all these years. Yeah, so that's been good.
So you worked with scammers. What, tell me about that, what they like to work with.
Well, yes, I worked with scammers. There's the 6x4 and there's the 6x6. 6x6, everybody wanted to have because it was more powerful, easier to handle, much better recovery vehicle. 6x4 was pretty old hat. I mean, been used during the wartime. You know, it was getting a bit old in the tooth. So wherever possible, you left them back in the workshops and used the 6x6. However, the 6x4 was a good old workhorse. She'd done a good service, and she was fairly easy to maintain. Wasn't difficult. Not as powerful, and many of the things you had to do were manhandling, rather than with the 6x6, things were so much easier. And because it was more powerful, you didn't have to lay down so much tackle, you know, 2-for-1s where you could do a straight pull and so forth and so on. I should imagine by the time I got to the Ordnance Field Park, after that I don't think I had anything more to do with 6x4s. When I went to places like Seven Armoured workshops, we were using 6x6s, but the 6x4 I think probably after about 1958. I don't think I used a 6x4 after that date, except once on the artificer course. They made us use a 6x4 purely, I think, for the experience. Yeah, in the recovery section bit we did on the TIFIS course. But, what can I say? I used to go out with the recovery vehicle as what they used to call the attendant vehicle mechanic, because if the recovery mechanics, people like Fred Furser and those sort of people, he was the sergeant, you know, vehicle mechanic, recovery mechanic, and we would go out on an evening to do a recovery, and we had some pretty nasties, you know. They used to do a courier trip every evening from Hanover to Hildesheim, signals courier, and they had champs in those days, which were pretty bloody useless vehicles, very high centre of gravity, far too powerful for the vehicle itself, and we lost a lot of people in them because they were pretty unstable. And we went out one night, Fred Furser and myself, and another guy, to do a recovery where this champ had hit a tree, and we actually had to cut a guy out of the champ because it had folded and trapped his legs, and I think he lost one of his legs as a result. And we issued a warning, or at least the commander of Ford Brigade did, to everybody, saying about the wet leaves on the road and the champs were unstable. And the very next night we had another champ hit the same tree, and this time it killed the bloke. Once again, going far too fast, round the corner, hit the leaves and bang, and wiped him out. And that wasn't nice either, having to go and recover a vehicle with a body in it. So, yeah.
Did that affect morale badly, those sort of incidents?
Of the units from where the blokes came from, yes, I think it did. People were awfully upset when you lost a comrade, you know. We had a bloke, became an ASM later on, a bloke called Smith, and we went to pick up a Daimler Dingo, which had overturned with a young officer trapped underneath it, and we were assisting. And when we lifted the Daimler Dingo, the chap had been trapped underneath it, had died, and because he'd been there a little while before we got there and lifted him off, the air came out of the body, because, you know, the way it does. And it sounded like the man was screaming, you know, because the vocal cords. And Smithy just turned around and he was as sick as a dog, you know, on the side of the road. So, yeah, you got some fairly nasties from time. And then you had some funnies, you know. Went down one day. And that was with a 6x4. We went on to the Autobahn to pick up an American vehicle. The sergeant had been driven down by the MPs to us, so he got in the vehicle with us. The bloke who was with me that night, the driver and the recovery man, was a bloke called Trescothick, Pop Trescothick, a very well-known man in the Corps, you know, a bit of a drinker and, you know, a well-known character. And we got out there to find the vehicle, and the bloke he'd left with it was a private first class, had left. Some young lady had come along in a Porsche, and he'd just disappeared with this lady in a Porsche, leaving the vehicle and all the equipment on the side of the road. He was picked up later at trying to get across the border into France with this young lady, and he was shipped back to the American and dishonorably discharged, but that's another story. But yeah, so we recovered that with a straight toe. All that happened was the joint on the water jacket had blown. There was nothing we could do to repair it on the side of the road, so we recovered it, just towed it back. And but the German police were extremely good. If we came through Hanover with something on the back and they saw us coming, they would very often go in front of us and clear the road for us, because they knew damn well having something fairly heavy beyond the back of a Scammel is not the easiest thing to get through the traffic in the middle of a city like Hanover. And they were extremely good. They used to clear the road for us. It was just first class. Good liaison between the coppers, you know, German coppers and ourselves. And they would take us right up to the gate and just give us a wave and drive away, you know. First class people.
Were relations with the German population good in general?
Yes and no. If you behaved yourself, yes, no problem. I had some good German friends, and I still have some good German friends out there now. In fact, when I left the army, I went back to work in Germany for a short period of time. But yes, I had very good friends. Everywhere I went, I got on extremely well with the Germans, because I think I treated them as I would another normal person. But one or two of the blokes used to go out and get drunk at night time and cause a problem. Well, if you do that, then you're going to upset everybody, Germans and English to boot. So the answer was, yeah, if you behave yourself, no problem. And they respected you for that. But if you did step out of line, yes, you know, they didn't like that, because they don't like it in their own people. Yeah. But, yeah, Four Armour Works, we had a good relationship. I mean, we played football against Hanover 96, which was, you know, in those days, was Bundesliga 1, you know, I mean, top of the tree. And we drew 3-3 with them. But then we had playing for Four Armour Workshops, an English international. My two fullbacks, because I was a goalkeeper, two fullbacks were both from Hibernian, both national servicemen. The left half was from Aston Villa, and he was a national serviceman. So, yeah, I think there were only about two regular soldiers on the side, and I was one. Yeah.
So the social life in Germany was good then?
Yeah, pretty good. We used to have an open day where the Germans could come in and have a look around the workshops. You've no idea how much bull went on there before we opened up for the German public. I mean, you know, it was the old-fashioned business. If it moved, salute it, and if it stood still, you whitewashed or polished it. But, yeah, the Germans used to love coming and have a look at the workshops. They just come out and have a look, and it was great. Mm. Yeah.
You were telling me earlier of a story of an American soldier on the motorway.
Yeah, there was the one that left the vehicle, yeah. And another one where this chap had... we went out to recover him. The military police came along and said there was only one driver, so they told us where he was. And we went, and there we found him on the side of the autobahn, having broken down and run out of fuel. Now, the vehicle had large fuel tanks and also about six jerry cans of fuel as well, in addition. Now, they were huge fuel tanks right the way down the side of the vehicle, so obviously built for long distance travel. And this guy, I asked him where he was bound for, and he said Frankfurt and Maine, typical American. And I said, well, you're on the wrong side of the autobahn. I said, you're about 240 miles away, or maybe more. And he said, well, I've just come from France. I thought, thinking that he'd landed at Hamburg and come down. He'd actually landed in France, got into Germany, taken the wrong autobahn. Instead of being South Germany, he'd come up the E3, and he'd come all the way up, and he'd broken down just outside of Hanover, not a drop of juice left. So we actually picked him up and took him back to Four Armoured, where we had quite a fun, because we asked him if he wanted some tea, and he didn't even know what tea was. He'd never drunk tea in his life. He'd only ever drunk coffee. And so what we used to do in those days, we had dry rations in the guard room, and these people tried to make him a cup of tea and left him the sugar and milk, and he was trying to drink it without sugar and milk, and honestly, it was absolutely horrendous. He was about 6 foot six tall, thin as a beanpole, and pretty moronic. At the end of the day, what we did, we just juiced him up, bled the system through, got him working in the morning, and gave him very detailed instructions on how to get to Frankfurt. And we never heard any more. But, yeah, we had one or two sort of instances of that nature. But we found the Yanks in the main a pretty undisciplined lot, I'm afraid. When I was an ASM, I went down to pick up a vehicle that had been broken down from Seven Armour Workshops in Fallingbostel, and when we were going down to Bavaria for an exercise, and I turned up and I found the bloke on the guard room gate actually stoned out of his mind on drugs, and the sergeant was sitting in the guard room, and this bloke was laying on the floor with his rifle. So I picked the rifle up and went into the guard room and gave the rifle to the bloke, and I said, yeah, I think you better sort of do something with your bloke. They went outside, and he'd been on drugs. He was actually stoned. Yeah, terrible. So there we are. My opinion of the Yanks are, it's not very high, I'm afraid. Their attitude is, it was like they are in the war, you know, you just throw everything at it and it will sort of hopefully go away. I don't like their discipline. And that, I must say that, you know, looking at some of the guys now, when perhaps I'm old fashioned, but looking at some of the guys on Reading Station just recently, you know, I wouldn't, if I'd have been in uniform as I was once in Reading Station, I would have taken them around the corner out of the public eye and I would have braced them up. You know, they sit there with their berets through their lapel and their combat jacket, because they don't wear the number twos as we used to, and the ties adrift, and you know, pretty scruffy looking guys. You know, I think, you know, I was proud to wear my uniform. You know, maybe I was a bit of a bullshitter, as they say, but yeah, I was proud, and my shoes were always clean.